not nostalgic for our past. I am desperate to remind this younger generation of what a bright future they have awaiting them.
Learn to be courageous and recognize that freedom is not free.
This is Eye on Your Money with Gary Rathman, President and CEO of Private Wealth Consultants. Your free market voice.
Free market voice.
Of the Midwest. Call Gary, 855-334-4556. Gary Rathman has over 30 years of experience in making the best choices for you to keep more of what you earn. Educational, real, relevant. Eye on Your Money with Gary Rathman.
This is
good evening and welcome again to Eye on Your Money, your free market voice of the Midwest. I am Gary Rathman, your host. Our number here, 855-334-4556. Give us a call if you have a question or comment. Our website, eyeonyourmoney.com, eyeonyourmoney.com. You can go there and see what Katie has posted. And of course, if I haven't beat you over the head enough with this, I'm going to continue to do it. Download the iHeartRadio app, iHeartRadio. It goes to your smartphone, your iPad, your computer, anything that takes downloads, applications, and you can get Eye on Your Money no matter where you are. Eye on Your Money on iHeartRadio. So download that. It's free app. It's terrific. A lot was going on today, and I wanted to spend a couple segments tonight talking about something that is relatively unknown, I guess. Not many people know about this. It's not widely publicized, but it's an important thing. Now, tonight, I want to talk about the Export-Import Bank, and we're going to do it in a neutral stance. We've got a call into Neil Asbury, who is a nationally syndicated radio host that's a friend of mine, wrote a book called Conscientious Equity. His show, nationally syndicated, is called Made in America, where he talks about importing jobs or bringing jobs back to this country. And he's an import-export expert, an export expert. Import-export expert, and we're going to have him on the show probably next week to talk about this in a little more detail and maybe a little more, I don't want to say partisan way, but a different perspective, since he is the guru on imports and exports of products and services for the country. But tonight, I wanted to talk, because it's coming up in September, so we're about 90 days away from the charter, essentially the charter of the Export-Import Bank of the United States, whether it's going to be renewed or not. And there's a lot of banter on both sides that it's considered the poster child, the ultimate corporate welfare, and crony capitalism, and then if it doesn't get renewed, that it's going to cost hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs in this country. So since most of us don't really give it a lot of thought, I wanted to spend some time talking about the Export-Import Bank. Now, what they do, what the Export-Import Bank, I'm going to call it the EXIM Bank, because that's getting tiresome already, and I'm 3 minutes into the show. The EXIM Bank, it's been around for a long time. I think 1934 is where it started. And what it does, it finances companies or countries that buy our goods. So let's say I'm an American company, and I make something that's fairly expensive, and I export that or want to export that. I want to sell it to a foreign country or company. That foreign country or company can get financing for my goods that it's buying from me in America it can get financing for the for that purchase from the Ex-Im Bank. The bank is a United States federal government entity. It gets its money from the United States government. Therefore, it gets it from you and me, the American taxpayer. And it charges fees and interest on loans to people outside or countries, companies outside the United States to buy my goods. Now, I'm still on the bubble with this. And as you as we go through the evening talking about this, you're going to see that I'm kind of on both sides of the issue. But what I want to convey is I kind of understand both sides of the issue. Now, the biggest benefactor to the Ex-Im Bank, and this is part of the argument people have for getting rid of the bank, the biggest benefactor is Boeing. So Boeing sells aircraft, big ticket items, and if a country wants to or a company wants to buy a Boeing aircraft, they can finance that through the Ex-Im Bank. If I'm an importer and I want to import things to America, I can get some financing through the Export-Import Bank. Most of it is for exporting. So we're going to focus on that. The libertarian people, if you will, the Tea Party people, a lot of conservatives, a lot of Republicans, are not really in favor of the Ex-Im Bank. And it's because it's seen as crony capitalism, as corporate welfare. You would think that a company the size of Boeing would be able to finance its sales on its own, or the country or companies buying a Boeing product would be able to get financing on its own to make that purchase. And there's certainly something to that argument. Now, one of the big catch-22s, if you will, for the Ex-Im Bank is that it's one of the few, if not the only, government entity that is actually profitable. It actually showed a profit of over $2 billion the last 5 years, and that profit goes to the United States government, which is you and me. So there's a lot on both sides of this equation. The other part of the equation is it kind of levels the playing field. Other countries have the equivalent of an export-import bank. So to compete with China, to compete with South Korea, which each have financed more than $100 billion each of their respective countries' exports, to compete with that, we have to also have an export-import bank. Now, like I said, Boeing, the number one benefactor of this bank. General Electric, Caterpillar, Applied Materials, all in the top 10 of major benefactors of this bank. Now, that being said, is this corporate welfare? Is this the United States government using American taxpayer dollars as corporate welfare? Is this essentially an opportunity for companies to overprice their product to commit fraud? Once again, the argument can be made on the affirmative because currently there's four or five high-level executives of the Export-Import Bank under investigation for fraud and bribery. So you can see where the argument goes. The bank provides loan guarantees, insurance coverage, direct loans, and working capital guarantees in regards to or in connection to American companies. Now, I can argue on both sides of this. I don't think that Boeing really needs an additional $8 billion of assistance from taxpayer money, or General Electric, $2.6 billion. Bechtel Corporation, $1.8 billion. Caterpillar, $1.35 billion. I mean, do these huge companies really need that amount of money from the federal government in order to support their exports? I mean, Caterpillar, $1.3 billion, that's not very much money compared to what the company does globally. We'll continue looking at this when we come back and take a look at the political fight that's happening and why the politicians are actually fighting on the side they're fighting on. I'm Gary Rathbun. This is Eye on Your Money.
Now, back to Eye on Your Money with Gary Rathbun.
You know, looking at the support and opposition to renewing the I don't want to say charter, but for lack of a better word, I'm going to use the word charter. It's authorization, the Export-Import Bank. It's interesting looking at the political dynamics of this. Now, Republicans are traditionally seen as supporters of business in this country, and Democrats are traditionally seen as supporters of more the individual or civil rights in this country. And Tuesday, Democrats introduced some legislation that would reauthorize the agency for up to 7 years and increase its lending cap to $175 billion. And conservatives, or Republicans, not necessarily conservatives, Republicans are on the bubble as to whether to support this or not, for fear of being seen as supporters of big business at the cost of little business, and supporting corporate welfare, supporting crony capitalism. So it's interesting to see the dynamics. The fact that Democrats are supporting it causes some Republicans to not support it, and vice versa. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is quoted as saying, while he hadn't decided if he will support it, he's urging a renewal of the program to come to the Senate floor before its September expiration. Now, when I hear a politician saying he hasn't decided if he will support it yet, that tells me that the lobbyists aren't done with him yet. We don't know how much money is involved for his support. Now, we know that while back on the budget supporting it, it was $2 billion going to some project in his state. So we know what the price is. We just don't know if the lobbyists are convincing him to support this or not. So it's an interesting dynamic. The Chamber of Commerce supports it, of course. Big business supports it, of course. Small business saying it shows favoritism to big business. And so it's an important, interesting political dynamic that is going on here. So kind of a role reversal between the Republicans and the Democrats. And Harry Reid is satisfied to sit back and kind of just enjoy the show. He says it's very important, but has declined to say whether the Senate should pass it first or whether he wants to see if the House will go first. When Harry Reid says, quote, "I don't think it really matters. I'm not wed to either who does it first." Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. I'm sure he wants to see the House do something first and then look at the polling data and see where it falls, because everything they do, every piece of legislation, every issue they have is going to affect the fall elections. And it's just going to be interesting how this plays out. So libertarians, conservatives, as a rule, are against it. And the Cato Institute came out and they weren't really in favor of it. The Mercatus Center, who we've talked to many people from the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, not really in favor of it. What was the other one? The National Review, I believe. The National Review, not really excited about it, but it's an important issue. And now that Eric Cantor is out as the House Majority Leader, and now Kevin McCarthy is in, Kevin McCarthy isn't real in favor of renewing the Export-Import Bank. So, McCarthy wants to certainly ban abortion, repeal Obamacare, slash taxes on high-income houses, and block a path to citizenship for unauthorized migrants living in the United States. This is one of those issues that's on the bubble. So my thought is they'll probably renew it, and they'll renew it in time, but they may have some significant modifications to how it works. It's easy to see how the Ex-Im Bank will be influenced or can be influenced by lobbyists. So if foreign airlines are receiving subsidized loans to buy Boeing, I could see how Delta Airlines would be not too excited about this. Now, it is profitable from a government standpoint, but I can see where fraud and favoritism could go into that. So we're going to keep an eye on this. We're going to look at it a little deeper and talk to some experts in the field in the days ahead. When we come back, up next, Turkey's moving around a couple hundred tons of secret gold and playing against the rules a little bit. So we're going to take a look at Turkish gold and trade with Iran when we come back. I'm Gary Rathman. This is Eye on Your Money.
Now back to Eye on Your Money with Gary Rathman.
You know, over the last several years, we've looked at Turkey in their oil for gold deals, quote unquote. If you remember during the crisis in the European Union, a lot of information about Turkey and Greece continually leaked out, and their economies were just incredible. I mean, we saw high rates of unemployment. We saw pictures of government agencies and bureaucracies where records were piled up in garbage bags in different rooms. It was just a train wreck. So Bloomberg, among others, continued researching this. And a report was leaked March 14th of a network that spanned Turkey, China, Dubai, and Iran. And this was seen as one of the most complex illicit finance schemes that prosecutors have ever seen in the region. Now, you always have the classic money laundering techniques of over-invoicing and false invoicing, which we've talked about. Her rehypothecation, does that ring a bell? Yeah, more on that later. But the secret government plan to juice Turkey's exports goes a lot deeper. And the scheme, even though it's being exposed, really isn't slowing down anything coming out of Turkey. Their trade balances continue to fluctuate unpredictably as gold stocks flow out of the country in bursts. And the Turkish economy minister says Turkey is going to continue doing it if those casting aspersions on the gold trade are searching for immorality. They should take a look in the mirror. There's a classic turnaround, isn't it? Classic turnaround. Odd exports of gold out of Turkey to Iran goes back to May of 2012. In 2013, as you remember, Turkey started having plunging currency, surging inflation, and slower growth, and the specter of rapid QE, quantitative easing, driven hot money outflows, leaving the nation desperate. Now, there's a gentleman by name of Zafer Kaglian, the minister in charge of Turkey's $800 billion economy, decided that the only way to ensure success in the upcoming election was to cheat. So he described the trade gap as unsustainable and said the government should take steps to improve it. What he didn't mention was a clandestine export boosting operation started up more than a year before that was helping to solve the trade imbalance. 3 weeks before, Kaglian had been secretly taped by the national police investigators, telling his collaborators to find a way to increase exports by at least $1 billion a month. Now, the operation featured an Iranian-born businessman who liked fast horses, faster cars, and the fastest planes. Kept expecting to say fast women in there, but that didn't show up. His unique skill, you're going to love this, was getting gold into a sanctions-enriched Iran. Sanctions-encircled Iran, I'm sorry. Enough gold that for a time, he became the government's key instrument in improving Turkey's economic imbalance. Turkish judges and police have been investigating this and investigating him when the judge in charge of the affair was mysteriously reassigned. And then in a run-up to the March municipal elections this year, the prime minister decided the inquiry as an attempted coup. So that all got buried over or pushed aside. How a team that included Turkey's economy minister sought to manage the current account deficit, as the gap is called, by juicing exports to Iran is laid out in a 300-page document prepared by Turkish investigators. Gold transfers to Iran jumped from 53 million in 2011 to 6.5 billion in 2012. Now, they sent thousands of tons of overpriced and sometimes fictitious food onto ships steaming into Dubai and Iran. Now, smoothing out the complications, of course, to some of the government ministers and that kind of stuff was bribes going to these ministers, multi-billion dollar diamonds and millions of dollars stuffed into suit bags, chocolate boxes, and even shoe boxes. Tons of gold flowed from Turkey to Iran, much of it through Dubai. And that freed up a lot of the Iranian money trapped in Turkish banks, and some are in turn boosting Turkish exports. So what was happening here? Okay, I read through this report. What was happening was the Iranian assets were locked up and frozen due to sanctions. The Turkish economy needed to look a lot better than what it did, not only to get people reelected, but to get the world putting money in there, borrowing, loaning money to them, and juicing up their stocks and businesses. And they had a few figures involved, this Iranian businessman. Some of the Turkish ministers were involved. This was a multi-billion dollar enterprise that stretched from Ghana to China to Dubai to Iran. All of it somewhat dirty. All of it involving bribes and fraud. All of it to juice the higher export numbers in the economy of Turkey, even though the exports were gold that juiced the numbers, but it didn't really do anything, had no relevance in the real economy. When they're transferring out gold to the tune of 200 tons to Iran, this was about 15% of the current account deficit that helped the appearance of the Turkish economy. Now, the reason I think this is relevant, the reason I go through all these numbers and reports and statistics for you, is it reinforces what I've said about how things work. If you go back during this time frame, you will see headlines in the financial papers that Turkey's numbers are improving, that they're doing better, that they've turned around. And later we find out it's all been cooked. It's all been cooked. There's nothing there. So the important thing to learn from this is when things in some of these countries look too good to be true or look like they're improving too quickly or in spurts, we need to dig in deeper and see what's behind it. And if we can't find out what's behind it, then you need to run away. This one guy that was involved into it, this Iranian businessman, he was arrested and he was released because there was no evidence to probe the charge. Really? Really, he had $18 million in liquid assets that were frozen in Turkey and all of that was released. Now that tells you how the system works over there. Bottom line is we trust no one and nothing. For those people that say gold is not money on the surface, I agree. But money doesn't necessarily represent value, and gold does. This is how Iran gets around their sanctions. This is why some of us, when our government says we're going to place sanctions on Iran, on Syria, on China, on Russia, we just kind of roll our eyes because we know the corruption channels are already put in place. I didn't invest any money in Turkey after the fall and it started to recover. Not because I'm smarter than everybody else necessarily, but because I don't trust any of the stuff coming out of there. I haven't invested any money in Greece, and I'm not going to for the foreseeable future. I don't see where the recovery, the change, is real. Now, we've spent darn near every night for the last couple of weeks talking about or mentioning China and the rehypothecation shenanigans with copper and aluminum, and how it's much, much bigger than anybody thought, which means it's enormously bigger than we think. And you remember a week or so ago, I said, I wonder if they're doing the same thing with precious metals. Well, when we come back, I got an answer to that question. And I got the answer to the tune of 15 to upwards of $80 billion. We'll talk about that when we come back. I'm Gary Rathbun. This is Eye on Your Money.
Now back to Eye on Your Money with Gary Rathbun.
This is a story that just never goes away. It seems like China in the last, several months now has had issues with rehypothecation of some of its metals, non-ferrous metals, that are stored in port warehouses. And the first report we had, the first thing we looked at was, 80,000 tons of aluminum and 20,000 tons of copper or something like that. And it's quickly escalating through the whole process of warehouses that issue certificates for people to borrow money. Now, just to refresh your memory, here's how some of the deals work. Some of the commodities financing, the owners of a raw material sitting in ports uses receipts from those warehouse companies to get credit from the bank, which they put to work in another investment, preferably a higher yielding investment before repaying the debt. Other deals involve Chinese buyer placing orders for commodities with overseas companies and then applying for a letter of credit from a lender, which they use to import the materials. The buyer can then sell the consignment in the domestic market and use the money on shore at a higher interest rate before repaying the original loan. Okay, nothing too complex about that, other than both thought processes are based on the actual commodity being somewhere that is used as collateral. And I've said, as we've gone through this several times, I've said, what do you think would happen if they did the same thing with their gold and silver? Well, today it comes out that China's chief auditor discovered 94.4 billion won of loans backed by falsified gold transactions. As much as 1,000 tons of gold may have been used in lending and leasing deals in China. where these other commodities, including metals and agricultural products, get used to get credit and lending restrictions. As much as $160 billion in transactions projected by Goldman, $80 billion may involve gold. $46 billion in copper, $13.8 billion in iron ore, and $10 billion in soybeans. Now, what's this mean? Does it matter to us? Well, yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. Any clamp down by Chinese authorities on these financing deals involving gold would probably put some downward pressure on gold prices temporarily in the short term. China's gold imports from Hong Kong fell 20% in May from a month earlier, as increasing volatility in the Chinese currency made the precious metal less appealing to the local investors. Now, the Chinese population have a strong cultural affinity to purchasing gold and gold jewelry. And as more and more of these people, remember, they have a population of 1.4 billion people, and their standard of living is slowly increasing. So as their standard of living increases, they're likely to purchase more gold and silver. So any scaling back by banks of these gold-backed financing deals might lead to a short-term reduction in the Chinese imports and also spur some sales by companies looking to repay lenders. So hence, that will drive down the price of gold on the open market in the short term. In the longer term, it's likely to drive prices up significantly. I mean, there's 15.2 billion, maybe as high as 80 billion of outstanding loans tied to gold that may or may not exist. Somebody's got to back that up with gold. It's got to be somewhere. And that covering the shorts, if you will, may drive the price of gold up significantly. We'll keep watching it, but like I said before, looks like it's going to run into the gold, and will be interesting to watch. Coming up next, we're going to talk about calls and puts. I'm Gary Rathbun. This is Eye on Your Money, your free market voice of the Midwest.